Okay, it's 5 to 1 and we're going to get going here. So the idea of this symposium was something that Phil Bauer and myself got the attention of the C3 meeting about a year ago at the conference when we were meeting in Long Beach. And it grew out of a kind of a persuasion, and the persuasion is that all of this discussion on climate change is by and large being dominated, at least when it comes to funding, by those who propose a modeling solution, a gene solution, or a fear solution. And so our the originators, really, of adjustment to climate change is the farmer himself or herself. And that's been going on for generations. And it's quite clear when you look at sort of the incremental changes that are happening in either temperature or precipitation, as well as the extremes, and their permutations over time, that basically farmers continue to adjust. Now, we hope that those farmers are being advised by crop consultants and by crop scientists who have an appreciation for the scale of changes that are occurring from a management point of view as well as from a genetic point of view. And so the purpose really of today's discussion is to raise the flag for agronomic research and its considerations and what we can contribute to the discussion, because at the end of the day, it is the agronomic scientist that is going to have to exploit whatever environment we're being dealt with and whatever genotype options we have with a whole series of prescription and prescriptive management at our disposal. There's been a huge change in technologies, and so these agronomic technologies are really fascinating in some cases. In some cases, the technologies are not worth the advertisement that has accompanied them. And part of the role of agronomic scientists is to sort those out. So with that, I'm going to just say a couple words. We're going to try to keep this presentation on time. You might notice that we're a little bit 25 minutes, or in some cases 30 minutes. And so what we decided to do to try to keep everything on time and to keep Dr. Rush happy is to try to finish by about 4:20, because the poster session goes on at 4:00, and the international speakers get a half hour because we're really delighted that they could attend, and the so-called domestic or within North American speakers are given 25 minutes, not because they don't have less to say, but this is the time frame that we're operating under. It's a real pleasure for me to introduce Emerson Nafziger, corn and soybean extension specialist, and one of the last remaining agronomic scientists at the University of Illinois. So he has lots of experience, and he's going to deal with the topic that you see in front of you. So thank you, Emerson.
Feel like the dinosaur that just saw the volcano erupt. We're going to talk about this. I can't say that we started the work that I'm going to talk about with the idea of climate change and resiliency, but it strikes me every time we talk about this that I kind of ask the question to myself, how do farmers avoid managing for climate change? What they have to manage for changes all the time, weather variability, and I don't know. At this point, it's just a hypothesis what that's going to mean, I suppose. But we'll try to answer this question, and before I even get started, I'm going to tell you that my answer is going to be, we think so, to the question that I pose. This is just an outline. We're going to talk a little bit about how we got to where we are. Some data we have on adding a third. I'm not going to talk about a fourth crop into the rotation. Is this the way to get more stability, tillage and stability? We'll talk about that a little. And then using different crop sequences with corn and soybean. There are ways, small ways, to be creative within corn and soybean system by just changing or adding a different sequence. And finally, we'll come back to the question and answer it a little bit with regard to soils. The current emphasis, a lot of work is being done on soil changes, and we're doing some of this as well with some of our longer-term studies to see what has changed in the soils. I think it's going to be tough to relate those soil changes to yields and so on, but at least that's the emphasis today. I just showed you these. I'll go through these real quickly. My colleague and co-author Joe Auer told me I had too many slides, so I said I'd go fast. Tony is very worried, though, that I might not get done in time, even though he has no experience with that happening with me. But think of the remarkable soybean crop. This is the area from 1960 to today. It's gone up by almost five times. Yields, worldwide yields, that's the one I have the label on, have gone up a little more than double. And those are dominated by North and South America, which now produce something around more than 80% of the world's crop. And the production has gone up by tenfold in that period of time. So soybean has come out, in the lifetime almost of people alive today, certainly in the last 100 years. It's gone from an obscure crop to a major world crop. I think for the first time that this has ever happened. And I was bragging to someone yesterday about our high soybean yields we have in Illinois, more than our high corn yields this year. And I said, soybeans is the new corn. Farmers get excited about soybeans. That's always a good thing. Most of the time, they're much more excited about corn. This is what's happened with maize area in the world. The area has gone up only 1.7 times in that period of time. In other words, it's always been a major world crop. Yields have gone up about 3.2 times in that period, and production about 5x compared to soybeans 10x. So they're both here as a major part of the world's cropping mixture. This is the U.S. corn and soybean area, and you can see the pattern that it's taken. It's always of interest to me to look at soybeans, which came out of basically nothing at the time my father was growing up on the farm, to what it is today, a crop that we pay a lot of attention to. This was one of Dr. Lauer's figures, and he just shows in the Corn Belt, the major part of the Corn Belt, Iowa, much of Illinois, harvested land in corn and soybean constitutes more than 90% of the farm cropped area. And there are people that look at this with great alarm and say that we've put ourselves in a vulnerable position by having only these two crops on so much of the land. And just to put numbers to it, planted area in the United States in 2014 was 54% corn and soybean. And not too much different in area of the two. This last year, they were almost the same if you take corn as corn for grain and not for including the silage corn. And you can see it's much higher than anything else we grow. And these are the yield trends for the two. Now, we know corn and soybean yields on a national or state basis tend to be pretty well correlated. I put this up to show you the crops do vary a little bit in their response to annual weather. Genetic improvement on a percentage basis has been fairly similar for the two crops. Obviously, a much 120 kilograms per hectare per year for corn and 26 for soybean, but still on a percentage basis, they're both going up. Farmers, after our last 2 years in Illinois where we've had record yields, that 2 years are equal, at this point they're about 3.8 tons per hectare. And in Illinois. You know, they're not quite, I don't hear quite as often farmers saying, well, my dad got as high yields as I did on soybeans. And they contrast it to corn where they just had a 230 bushel yield and wonder what happened to soybeans and what's wrong with soybean people. They don't say that quite as much anymore. And I like to think about this ratio. This is kind of an important one when it came to bringing soybean into the cropping system in the U.S. This is just simply the ratio of the corn yield divided by the soybean yield. And you see back in the 40s and back in the 30s, this would have looked similar to this. But bringing in the soybean crop, you'd expect it to yield half as much as your corn crop yielded. And that was a great boost to soybean. Obviously, the reason is that corn yields were so low at that time. But as a crop to introduce, and I do think that soybeans, you know, everywhere they've been started as a crop in the world, have this great bonus of growing in a field where they never grew before, and they seem particularly fond of that opportunity to do that, and yields just skyrocket. Well, not skyrocket. Yields are almost always higher if you have soybeans following several years of corn than if soybeans follow 1 year of corn or follow most other crops. So this has stabilized now over the last 40 to 50 years. That ratio is staying pretty consistent. And you can see in this what the signal to the farmer is in terms of stability of the two crops. We have years, the high ones there were 82 and 83, where soybean had a pretty poor year. And the low one there below 3 was in 2012, on the right-hand side was in 2012, when the drought affected our corn crop much more severely than it did the soybean crop. This is one from Illinois that goes way back to the time statistics started to be kept in the time when, after Abraham Lincoln was president. And this is what happened. Where did soybeans come into our system? The answer is they replaced these squiggly lines back there in 1900 to 1920. The top one of those down at the bottom there is oats. We don't have to raise quite as much oats to feed the horses to pull the plow anymore. And so oats, forages, small grains, basically these all declined to the point where we grow very little of those in the state of Illinois today, and soybeans replaced them. Almost all farmers that are people that grew up on a farm who are more than 60 years old remember in the Midwestern United States, remember when they stopped milking cows. And I remember faintly when we stopped milking cows, and you can see there during the 50s, almost everybody stopped milking cows. And the mixed farming rotations, which people would have pointed to as a way to have great stability, they were low yielding but very stable. Those have largely gone away, and soybean has replaced everything that wasn't corn. So why so much corn and soybean? They've been highly adapted to the U.S. corn belt conditions. They've been genetically tractable, and ability to adapt them has been good. And they produce higher returns than alternative commodity crops. That's the bottom line a farmer would tell you. The mix of protein, if you look at it worldwide, the mix of protein, energy, and fat required in large quantities by monogastric animals, including people, is provided almost perfectly by the blend of corn and soybeans. And there's no getting around that. That means, in my thinking, any crop that replaces either of those in the production system is going to need to produce them more efficiently and in great quantity. The only way to change that, because most of them go for animal feed, is to have fewer animals. Fewer animals might be a goal for many people, and consume the vegetable or the plant protein directly or plant products directly. But the mixed farming, return to a mixed farming or livestock-based system, which is almost a prerequisite for a more complex rotation where you'd have forage and so on, is not going to work very well if we go away from animal agriculture. It's actually a return towards animal agriculture. I suppose the alternative is to let a lot of hectares lie idle. Corn and soybean can, if the conditions dictate, of course, be used directly as food rather than as animal feed. And lastly there, we agronomists and farmers and the chickens that we feed really like corn and soybeans. Let's talk about some rotations. We've been running an experiment since the late 90s, started in the mid-90s, established by 98, and we continue it at a couple of sites in western Illinois. I'm only showing you the results from one of the sites here today. It's been a site where continuous corn, which is on the left there, has been particularly poor at that site for reasons we do not understand. Average yields of the corn-soybean rotation, the second bar there, have been significantly higher at above 12 tons, average over those 18 years of data. And adding wheat in as a third crop, and we did it in both of the orders possible there on the right-hand side, did boost the yield of corn significantly. The little star that I got up, have up on top of those says that the difference between tilled and no-tilled was significant. And it was significant at each of these where tillage increased the yield of the corn crop. This is the same thing for the soybean crop. It's a very similar result where the soybean following wheat yielded a little better than soybean following corn. They both yielded better than the corn-soybean rotated and more than continuous soybean. I cut short the period, as you might have noticed up at the top. In the early days of this, we were trying to experiment to see how much cyst nematode, a variety without cyst nematode resistance, would get beat up in continuous soybeans, and the answer is by a lot. And so I dropped out those early years because we had some huge yield losses due to cyst nematode in continuous soybean. And I'm just showing you the last 11 years of data here. Again, somewhat surprising to me, tillage significantly improved yields in each of these rotations. Part of that was this last year. We had an unusual year in Illinois with very high yield levels, but no-till soybeans really took a beating and yielded less. At this location, yielded about 700 or 800 kilograms per hectare less than tilled soybeans. And we don't see that very often, but often enough to cause these differences. This is what happened with the wheat yields. Getting no-till wheat stands is a difficult, and that's why. But these are the level of wheat yields that we had, about 5 tons per hectare. Not pretty good wheat yields, nothing outstanding. This shows you the trends over time. And if we want to think about stabilizing the system, obviously continuous corn is not very stable. And I'm not going to spend much time talking about this because it's a complete mystery to me how you can have yields almost equivalent in continuous and rotated corn in some years and completely fall apart with the continuous corn yields in other years. And why it seems to go as cycles like that, I do not have any idea. And we've seen this last year there was a much smaller difference than we typically see. So that's sort of the story. Now, you can tell our comparison here is continuous corn, which we kind of use. We have some in Illinois and parts of the Corn Belt simply because we don't have anything else to follow corn after except corn. We have a higher corn area than soybean area, and so that's why we have continuous corn. And we continue to use it as kind of our standard. You know, it's not a favorite, and I think a lot of farmers in recent years have dropped it after some stress years and low yields. But continuous corn is still a basis of comparison in terms of other things that might be more stable. And certainly a corn-soybean yield, as you can see here, is more stable. I pulled out the continuous corn to look at the tillage effect, and generally this tillage effect, the advantage to tillage is pretty consistent. You can see a little bit, a few years when it wasn't less, but in many cases, in most years, tillage improves the yield of continuous corn. That's not a stand issue. It has to do with interactions with previous residue and other things that we don't probably understand very well. This is kind of the key one from those findings I just showed you. This is the return over input cost. This is not net income. It's return over some variable costs as we estimated them for the systems that I showed you. Continuous corn, continuous corn-soybean rotated, corn-soy wheat, and corn-wheat soy. And you can see that continuous soybean, and no one would actually believe me if I said that, but continuous soybean has been competitive at current prices, and I give the prices up in the upper right, $158 per ton for corn and $331 for soybean at those prices per bushel. Those are very close to current prices. So this is sort of what we see now. Adding a third crop, wheat, increases the yields of corn and soybeans and decreases the net returns because wheat is a very weak partner in that three-crop rotation, economically speaking. It's just a good thing to keep in mind if the economics doesn't work. People are going to be very reluctant to take this on unless somebody agrees to pay them to do so. This is a slide from Joe, from Dr. Lauer. They've been running these experiments for years in Wisconsin. I believe these studies started back in the 80s. He's giving here the results of 1994 to 2013. And it's an interesting experiment. They run 5 years of soybean followed by 5 years of corn in each plot. And they have each phase of the system in each year. And so this is the corn yield response following 5 years of soybeans. 5 years of soybeans is a lot of continuous soybeans, but they get good yields, as I'll show you in a minute. These are yields, and the number atop the bars is in bushels, and the significance is indicated by the letters. And down at the bottom is the percent difference from the continuous corn, I believe is the comparison they're making there. And you can see that the first corn-soybean rotated is on the left every 1 year of each. And then it starts with the first corn crop, the second corn crop, the third corn crop after 5 years of soybean. And they do, as the top says, the rotation effect lasts 2 years, increasing corn grain yield 15 to 17%, similar to what we would see as first-year corn following soybean compared to continuous corn. Ours runs 10 to 15% generally. And for the corn, for first-year corn, and the second 6% for second-year corn, higher than the continuous corn. And they have tillage and no-till over on the right-hand side. He doesn't show it in this case. But tillage increases yields the same as we saw in Illinois. This is the equivalent then for the soybean part of that study. And the story for soybean, as he says here, is different. The first year soybeans following 5 years of corn out-yielded the corn-soybean rotation, a point that I think doesn't surprise us very much. The second year of soybean after corn, 5 years of corn, is about equal to corn-soybean rotated. And then it goes down another year to approach the level of yield from the continuous soybean. And tillage made the same difference, again, as in this case, no-till actually yielded more than tilled. I can't explain that. And he put his results, he's doing a study, it turns out, there, and we didn't plan these together, obviously. I believe that this study started before Joe came to Wisconsin, but he has 3 years of data here showing the effect of the continuous corn, corn-soybean rotated, corn, soy, wheat, and corn, wheat, soy. I guess great minds think alike. They started the study, and I started it completely independently. He put all this on the same figure, which means the megagrams there is maybe a little off, but the bushels is correct. And continuous soybean, you can see its yield compared to rotated corn, soybean rotation. So he saw pretty much the same thing we did. A little less statistical significance separating there the soybean effect of adding that third crop in. And they also included continuous wheat there. I think one wheat crop every 3 years is enough. I love wheat, but, if it grows in Kansas. So he has very low yields from continuous wheat, which we kind of expect. That's a disease issue and just doesn't work very well. But the conclusions there would pretty much be the same. And the second thing I'll mention here is the corn-corn-soybean rotation. We've been doing a study here for about more than 10 years, just comparing continuous corn to each phase of corn-soybean rotation each year and each phase of the corn-corn-soybean rotation. Simple study, only 6 plots, and we expect corn following soybean to yield the same in both first year, corn, soybean after corn, which we have seen previously in both our work and at Wisconsin. But we really need to know second year corn in the corn, corn, soybean system yields more than continuous corn, and we need to know if soybeans following 2 years of corn yields more than soybean following 1 year of corn. You might say this is just sort of tinkering a little bit with the system, and I agree it is. But this is something that's eminently doable by farmers, as many of them are actually adopting this now, as they still have more corn area than soybean area, and this is a convenient way they found to spread these out. And this is the results of our study. What we expected, that is, first year corn following corn, corn, soybean, and then corn crop, and the corn, soybean rotated yielded the same there on the right. And second-year corn yielded less than that and more than continuous corn. So this is what we wanted to find out. And I don't know if we're surprised by that or not, but there's something cumulative about corn every year that seems to beat down the corn yields a little bit. Not a really big amount. And farmers would look at this and say, oh, that's what I would expect from continuous corn. This is what happened to soybean. This is a little more interesting, where we had a pretty substantial yield increase, about 8%, I believe, from soybeans after 1 year of corn compared to soybeans after 2 years. So 2 years of corn does soybeans more good than 1 year of corn. This is a comparison of the return. I only showed you data from one site, the Monmouth site. We have the same study at about 6 sites in Illinois. I put this together from 2 of the sites, and in terms of economic returns, the corn-soybean and the corn-corn-soybean systems are about equal. So even though we get a little bit better yield on that second-year corn than continuous corn, and we get higher soybean yields, when you take it all and average it together, you get about the same return, and continuous corn is not up there with those at current prices. So are these sustainable? We're not able to find very much evidence to the contrary. Yields vary with weather over time, but do not seem to be becoming less stable. I think we could make that case statistically, and I have. I just didn't show that to you today. Rotating corn and soybean provides a yield boost to both crops, and returns to this two-year rotation are competitive with anything else that most of our farmers can grow today. At current costs and prices. Adding a third crop, wheat, increases corn and soybean yields some, but lowers the overall return. And using no-till does not appear to add stability to the corn-soybean systems. You did notice, I flashed past it pretty quickly, but the cost savings with no-till means that those two systems returned about the same. Even though tillage increases yields a little, it costs more to get it. And so we don't have a problem with no-till, and our people are successfully able to do that. And the better people doing no-till say, well, I might take a little bit lower yield, but I'm still further ahead, and they're probably correct. So are the systems sustainable? We don't know. We don't have a full answer to this. We have to see what happens. We don't know what climate change effects are. They haven't been consistent enough in the Corn Belt to see what that might mean. We just know that corn and soybean respond similarly, but not always identically to weather and soil conditions. And then just some questions at the bottom that we might all ponder. Will there be changes in soils, changes in cultivars, insects and diseases? Are they going to increase beyond our control? Or weeds, which is a big question today as well. And I'll just leave those as a question. I found a quote just last month that I was interested. I'll leave you with this. And a scientist with ARS said you can't eat an apple every day, and the organisms that live in the soil are no different. They need diversity. And so she went on to make these statements about adding cover crops to improve the food source, I guess, for the microbes that are there. And they found two farmers to get quotes from them, one in Indiana, one in Nebraska, who both said they need more crop diversity, and corn and soybean just isn't working for them in that regard. So I'll just leave you with that. So are these together forever? And I say, why not? Thanks for your attention.